With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here on episode 37 of the 90 Feet From Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are presented by Underdog Fantasy, and I am your host, Joe Orico. You guys can check me out over on Twitter, at JoeOrico99. That's where I share all of my new fantasy baseball work, whether it's these podcasts, any articles that I write, posts that go out onto Patreon. You guys get updated on all of that stuff by following me over at JoeOrico99. Really appreciate any follows over there. And also, if you guys have not done so already, subscribe to the show, hit us with a rating and review. It really does help the algorithm work itself out here. We're still a relatively new show. We're approaching the two-month point of doing this podcast, but any of those ratings and reviews that you guys can give really do help out the show. Today, we are going to be getting into Wednesday's slate, breaking down the big things that stood out to me. And then later on, we are going to be talking about the popular ads and drops over on Yahoo. You guys know the drill at this point. When it's just me, we tend to go over the previous day's news and notes, talk about the ads and drops, and then we mix it up usually once or twice a week when I do bring a guest onto the show. Earlier this week, it was James Anderson from RotoWire, if you guys missed that, for a prospect/rookie pitching update. And there's a hitter version last week with Eric Cross, if you guys are looking for some prospect content or if you did miss out on those shows. But let's start breaking down Wednesday. And there's nowhere else to start, I don't think, except for with Gavin Stone. He threw the 8th complete game shutout of 2024. They are really a dying breed. Just looking at the list yesterday, there's one from Gausman. There's one from Ranger Suarez. Obviously, Ronald Blanco had the no-hitter. They're pretty hard to come by these days. Only 8 so far, and we're, I think, maybe just at the 50% mark. I don't know if it's actually like today or over the next couple days, but the 50% point of the season is officially here. 8 complete game shutouts is not a lot, but Gavin Stone was really great yesterday. Obviously, 9 innings, no earned runs, 4 hits allowed, 7 strikeouts, and no walks. He had a 26% CSW and a 9.7% swinging strike rate. His rookie season has been fantastic. I've kind of been a critic of the strikeouts not coming. Maybe critic's not the right word, but the strikeouts have been kind of the only thing where he's lacking. In the minor leagues, we were seeing 30-plus percent strikeout rates pretty routinely. And we haven't quite seen that so far consistently in the major leagues. But over his last few starts, we are seeing those strikeouts start to really come. You're looking at 7, 7, 6, 5, those type of numbers over his last 6 games. 7, 6, 6, 3, 7, and 7. So he is getting the strikeouts coming a little bit more frequently than earlier in the year. There was a 1 strikeout appearance. There was a 2 strikeout game against the Jays. Another one with 2. So we're starting to see those numbers start to tick up a little bit. And it's actually funny. We mentioned him on that show with James the other day, and we talked about how his swinging strike rate, close to 12%, the strikeout rate is not really as high as it should be based on that at 19.5 still. Even with, he's kind of coming around recently, we're still not seeing quite the amount of strikeouts that, A, we were seeing in the minors, and B, you'd expect based on that pretty high swinging strike rate. Maybe not high is the right word, but based on that almost 12% number, you'd think that he'd be striking out 23, 24% of batters, which at that point, there's no problem, really, especially with a 7% walk rate. Then we'd be really swinging. But right now, I do want to see him consistently get those strikeouts up a little bit more. But even that being the case, a 2.73 ERA, a 1.12 whip, pitching for the Dodgers, obviously, is going to lead to a lot of win opportunities. And in his 15 starts, he's won 9 games. Wins are so random. We talked about Logan Allen the other day, 8 wins despite being awful this season. And then there's guys like Reese Olson comes to mind, like one or two wins, even though he's been really good. Wins are super random, but pitching for the Dodgers, you're seeing that come to fruition here with Gavin Stone with the 9 victories. So if you're still seeing him on any waiver wires, it's not terribly likely at this point, but if you are talking about I actually, just reading my tweet yesterday, I kind of misspoke. He's 81% on Yahoo and 55% on ESPN. I wrote Yahoo twice, but that second number, if you were confused looking at that tweet, that is on ESPN, and he's just over the halfway mark there. So if you're still looking for some starting pitching, maybe you've had a couple guys go down recently, you're looking to fill a spot, you're streaming, whatever, Gavin Stone is somebody that has pretty solid rest of season value, in my opinion. Now, excuse me, there have been some talk about how is he going to look down the stretch in terms of innings. He threw 131 innings last year, so I don't think it would be crazy to see him get to 160, 170, which is kind of where we're pacing right now. He's at 89 innings, so I think we're probably going to see him get to that roughly 170 inning mark. Maybe we see 160 or so, but he's not one of those guys that I have a massive worry about down the stretch. We've talked a lot. We're going to talk in a second about somebody else that I'm pretty worried about, but the Skeenses, the Joneses of the world, guys that we are kind of worried about, Garrett Crochet, guys who had massive, massive innings jumps one year to the next. We're not really seeing that with Stone. He's not going to get to the 200 mark, but nobody gets the 200 mark. We're getting 160, 170 thereabouts. That's about as much as you can hope for these days. So Gavin Stone is a pickup. He's somebody that I don't think is really going to be that expensive either, depending on the room. Maybe he is. I just don't think there's a lot of like hype around him. I don't know. Maybe that's going to be room dependent, because I feel like in the leagues that I play in, some of them people would not really hug him so tightly, and maybe it is the strikeout thing. People really, with starting pitchers, if you're striking out fewer than 20% of batters, people will generally kind of cast you aside or not value you properly. But I do think that the strikeouts are going to come more, and pitching for the Dodgers, there's a good chance we see 16, 17 wins here as a rookie. And honestly, rookie of the year in the National League isn't out of the question for Gavin Stone. If he keeps this up down the stretch, I think it is a possibility we see him. Even if he's not the rookie of the year, he's in the top three. He's really doing great things for you, and he's probably, honestly, just looking at the ERA estimators, everything like that, probably overperforming a little bit, but we're probably going to see a low to mid-threes ERA. I think, like I said, the strikeouts are coming, they're going to get better, and the win context is just so good. So nothing really working against Gavin Stone. He's also still just 25 years old, and if he develops further and gets even better and stronger outside of the strikeout context as the season goes along, I don't think anybody's going to be terribly surprised. So there's a lot working for him. James and I were singing his praises earlier this week, and it's great to see an awesome start in that first start since we did talk about him. Let's talk about Luis Gil. It does appear that the magic has kind of run out a little bit. Yesterday was pretty bad stuff. 4 innings, 4 hits, 5 earned runs with 4 walks and 2 strikeouts. The game was delayed by rain, and it was in the 5th inning, and I was wondering if maybe they were going to cancel the game and call it a complete game, because the Yankees had their 5 innings worth of at-bats, and then it was the Mets' bottom half of the 5th where we saw Gil give up a couple more runs. I was kind of curious if the game didn't continue going, if a couple of those runs would come off the board and they'd call it final after the top half of the 5th, and then there would have only been 2 earned runs for Gil with, I believe, 2 walks at that point. But they did keep going, and there was a couple of base runners that he left on, and then he was pulled from the game that were allowed to score afterwards. But we're getting into some trouble here with Luis Gil. He barely pitched in 2022 and 2023, and now we're entering into uncharted territory in terms of innings pitched in a season. You know, just talking about Gavin Stone and the worries about the innings, if you're any bit worried about Gavin Stone, you should be very worried about Luis Gil. He didn't pitch at all last season. It was 4 innings in 2022. He's coming back from Tommy John surgery, and we are starting to see, you know, the numbers catch up with him a little bit. It's not so much like, and I've been saying that the BABIP and the left on base are going to catch up with him, but it's been kind of the walk rate as well. Like, this guy issues so many free passes, and he has been able to get by mostly this season because of just the crazy high strikeout rate when you're striking out double-digit batters on a fairly regular basis, or 9 batters, 8 batters. Then it doesn't really matter so much. But the last 2 starts, it's 6 walks compared to 3 strikeouts, 12 earned runs allowed in 5 2/3. Baltimore is a very tough opponent, and New York has been surging, the Mets have. So you can give him a bit of a pass, but, you know, also just thinking about the innings, we are, I believe, officially now, or not quite officially, 2019, he threw 96 innings. And this year we're at 85. So we're very, very close to pushing up against the most innings he's ever thrown in a season. The Yankees are in a pretty decent spot, all things considered. Now, I know I've talked about the worries with Gerrit Cole, but even with that, they're 52-30. They're 22 games above 500. I don't think they're going to take many chances with Luis Gil, who is a potential ace of the future for them, 26 years old. You know, I don't think that they're going to really take too many chances and just say, all right, Luis, you're throwing 170 innings this year, especially seeing these last couple starts and how they've gone. I think it's pretty likely that he'll get shut down for a while or he gets sent to the pen to kind of preserve his innings. You work him down into a reliever for a couple months and you keep, you know, the appearances 1, 2, 3 innings at a time. And then once it comes to late August, early September, they start to build him back up again so that he can go 5, 6 innings in the playoffs. I think that's where we're headed. I think it makes sense from what the Yankees are doing. If the Yankees were like a 500 team, then I think it would be a little bit different, and maybe they would say, all right, we need him to compete. It's a tough division, et cetera, et cetera. But they're maybe, I shouldn't say they're running away with the division, but they're running away with a playoff spot. There's almost no chance. The Yankees would have to have a historic collapse to not get into the postseason. I think that they're going to want one of their better pitchers, a guy who is, you know, we're talking about the NL Rookie of the Year with Stone. He does have a chance at the American League Rookie of the Year. I think those chances are kind of dwindling, but that's the kind of talent we're looking at here with Luis Gil. I don't expect the Yankees to just say, all right, let's see what we got with him. We're going to let him throw 200 innings or even 160, 170. Like, I think we're probably at most looking at 120, 130 innings with Gil, and we're already at 85. So I think the prudent move right now would be to just see how he's valued in your league. You take the mostly excellent production we've gotten from him so far, and you try and sell him to the highest bidder. I think that the price would still be fairly high. You use the talking points that I just said. You know, the Orioles have been amazing this season offensively. The Mets recently, the whole Grimace Mets thing, they've been just great in the month of June. So you can maybe use those and say, all right, guys, like I don't need the pitching anymore. I'm trying to get a batter. Heels had a couple of bad starts, whatever. You're probably not getting full freight anymore. You know, the ERA has jumped up to 3.15, which is not bad, don't get me wrong. But Luis Gil's ERA two starts ago was 2.03, and he was at 1.82 on June 4th. So we are trending in the wrong direction. He has been outperforming, you know, aside from the injury potential, he has been overperforming this season. That he has a 4.12 xFIP now. His Sierra is currently at 4.05. Those walks have led to a lot of trouble, and it's only a 15% strikeout minus walk. And when you're looking at a 28% strikeout rate, it's still okay. But we've seen the problems that issuing so many free passes can give you. 12.7% is really, really tough to get by. Even with that strikeout rate, it makes it a lot more challenging. You have to be that much better each time out when you're issuing 2, 3, 4 free passes. And I just think that we're kind of at the wall now. We've hit the wall with Luis Gil, where we might see a few more good outings, assuming the Yankees give him that opportunity. But I think we're probably going to see him not make another start now for a little while. I think that would be the wise thing to do, and I don't think the Yankees are going to really want to take too many chances here. So if you're able to sell him in a trading league, I would look at what the highest bidder is willing to offer you and take it at this point, because I really think down the stretch we're probably not looking at a lot of fantasy value in the second half of the season. It's probably 35 to 40 innings spread out over maybe in, you know, 4, 5, 6 starts with some relief appearances in there, and I just don't think there's going to be a hell of a lot. He's not somebody I would want to be dropping. Just, you know, I want to see what the story is. And even if he goes to the pen, that doesn't mean he can't come back into the rotation. And that's what I think will probably happen. But I'd be very surprised if Luis Gil makes a start next week. I think that they are going to do what they can to try and keep him healthy, which would be the wise thing. But let's talk about Eric Fetty, who has been somebody I think that is pretty undervalued most of the season. Held his own in a very tough matchup against the Dodgers. You know, Shohei Ohtani, every time I look at the score sheet, he's hitting home runs. So he hit one yesterday. But overall, 6 innings, 5 hits, 4 earned runs with 5 strikeouts and 1 walk, 23% CSW, 8% swinging strike rate. This was one of the weaker outings from Fetty this season, and that kind of shows you a lot about how consistent he's been. 3.23 ERA, he has a 1.14 whip, 91 strikeouts and 25 walks over his 103rd innings pitched. He is still available in quite a lot of leagues. Let me just double check and see if it's gone up drastically this morning. I doubt it, though, the day after a start. No, it's actually gone down 1%. I don't understand, guys. He's at 61% after he was at 62% yesterday on Yahoo. I think what he's done so far is pretty sustainable the rest of the way. There's nothing really other than a slightly high left on base percentage that tells you that Eric Fetty's really getting lucky or overperforming. I think this is generally who he is.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
He's been excellent this season, and I think that, honestly, one of the main points right now is that the White Sox are going to be in sell mode. I think there's a good chance Eric Fetty, who has a year on his contract after this season, he signed a two-year, $15 million deal, I believe. It was 2 years, $15 million. He's got a year on his deal next year. So I think there is going to be a contender, or at least a better team than the White Sox, which is the bar is very, very low at that point. A better team is going to try and acquire him and likely will acquire him at the deadline. The White Sox, there's no real reason to hold him at this point. You're getting kind of found money here on a $7 million deal. You're getting a guy with a 3.23 ERA and a 1.14 whip who's been very consistent all year. He's not walking a lot of batters. There is going to be a team that is interested in his services. And if he goes to a contender, yeah, the wins are not something that's been super great for him. Although 5 wins for the White Sox this year is actually no small feat in 17 starts. But I think down the stretch, we are going to see Eric Fetty on a better team and still doing the same things that we are expecting. And we've seen for 17 starts now. Very, very consistent when he does have a quote-unquote stinker, a blow-up game. It's kind of like yesterday. There's been 3 times this year where he's allowed 4 earned runs and twice where he's allowed 5 earned runs. Every other start is 1 or 2. He's been really, really good, and I don't know why he's still super available. I guess it's the White Sox factor that's keeping people away. I don't know. The strikeouts, maybe, but the strikeouts are fine. Like, he's not, you know, he's not giving you 30-plus percent strikeout rate or anything, but you're looking at close to a strikeout per inning, 91 strikeouts in 100 innings. Every 7 innings or so, you're getting probably 6 strikeouts, you know. He's one of those pitchers where you do that kind of thing. You're seeing he's going 6 innings, it's 5 strikeouts. 7 innings, it's 6 strikeouts, usually. It's not always how it works, but it's not like he's giving you 1 or 2 strikeouts every time out here. He's doing really good things for you across the board, and I think that it's pretty sustainable. Once we do see him get moved, which I think is almost a certainty, that's only going to jump his value even higher. So if you're seeing Fetty out there, if you're seeing people dangle him in trades, I don't think they're asking a lot. I would be doing what you can to try and acquire him at this point. Let's talk Spencer Arrighetti. He was brilliant yesterday against the Rockies, and I think that maybe tells a lot of the story here, but we're going to talk about it. 7 innings, 3 hits, no earned runs, 10 strikeouts, and no walks. He had a 39% CSW, and he had a 14.6% swinging strike rate. It was an incredible number of strikes thrown. 78.6% of his pitches were thrown for strikes, and he had a bump of about 1.2 to 1.7 miles an hour across his entire arsenal. So people have been kind of interested in Spencer Arrighetti for a while. I think we can all see that he's not as bad as the ERA suggests. But I think there's also some problems. I want to see that command on a more consistent basis. The walks have been atrocious from him this season in the major league level, like not yesterday, but it's nearly a 12% walk rate still. If you're looking at the minor league levels, very routinely above double-digit numbers. And it's almost never a single-digit number if you look at his time in the minor leagues. 13%, 11%, 11%, 9%, 18%. The walks are kind of high, and I do want to see that more consistently before I'm willing to just say, yeah, he's an ad everywhere. We've seen some awful, awful starts from him that we shouldn't just forget about because of this. He was dreadful against the White Sox his last time out. He was really bad against Detroit. Every start of the season, I'm just realizing this now as I go through the game log, that yesterday was the first start of the season where he did not walk a batter, and in every start other than yesterday, he's walked multiple batters. So I think we are still a bit of a ways away before I want to say that he is a shallow league, 12-team ad type of guy. I think if you're playing in those deeper 15-team leagues, like we say a lot, there's nothing out there on the waiver wire. In NFBC leagues and 15-teamers specifically, you're really picking at scraps on the wire. So if you're seeing Arrighetti out there, I think he's probably worth taking a chance on in deeper formats. 10 and 12-team players, I don't think there's really a need to be picking him up right now. There are still a lot of flaws in his game. He's been a little bit unfortunate in terms of BABIP left on base luck, but I think I need to see him prove it a little bit more, quite a lot more, honestly, until I'm saying, yeah, he's a pickup in 10 and 12 team leagues. I don't think we're terribly close to being there yet. Let's talk about Francisco Alvarez. I think we are rapidly approaching the last call to add him. 74% on Yahoo, about 45% on ESPN. I was a little bit worried about what we'd see coming back from that torn ligament in his thumb. Was it going to alter his swing? Was it going to, you know, kill his power to some extent? I was worried about the impact it would have on him at the plate. In the 41 at-bats since he's returned, 17 hits. That's a .415 batting average with 3 home runs. Those 3 home runs have all come over the past 5 days. So it appears the thumb is all right. For the season as a whole, .313 batting average, .521 slug. We're seeing some really great numbers from him, and I think that this is a potentially generational catcher in terms of the power potential here. Not in terms of the overall output, I don't think, but honestly, maybe. Like, his defensive metrics are very strong. With that kind of power, we could be looking at, you know, one of the best catchers of his generation. Now he's healthy. He's in a lineup that is really getting hot. Rest of season going forward, like, he has 4 home runs in the 30 games he's played. He plays the rest of the season. If you look at the projections, 50 to 60 games, we're probably seeing another 10 to 12 home runs with really solid counting stats. I wouldn't expect a .300 batting average, but you're probably getting somewhere in the .240 to .250 type of range, I would imagine. He's running a pretty hot BABIP since he's come back, but the main thing is that he's healthy. He's swinging the bat okay. He's not hindered. If he'd come off the IL and gone like 1 for 19, not hitting any home runs, that's when we'd be kind of worried. And that's what we were talking about when he did go down. The hand, the arm, the wrist, anything that's going to potentially alter your swing path, your swing motion, that's where you get into some problematic territory. But all signs indicate that he is healthy. And if you're still seeing him on your waiver wire, one of the no-brainer pickups. Catcher has had some pretty strong pickups this season. Connor Wong's, the David Fries of the world. But I think that Alvarez is right up at the top of that list. I think at worst, he's a top 6 catcher with potential to be top 4 or 5 if things break right for him. Let's talk about Zach Neto. He's been on quite a roll recently. His season line as a whole is pretty damn excellent. .256 batting average with 31 runs, 10 homers, 35 ribby, and 10 stolen bases. This is excellent stuff. Now, I really wish the Angels would not put him 6th through 8th in the order. If you just look at their baseball reference or whatever page you look at to check out the team stats, the guy leading off has like a .310 on base percentage, Nolan Shanwell, who has been a little bit better as of late, but it's just been one of those head scratching things all season. Not just that, but just the entire configuration of the Angels lineup. When Joe Adell was on fire, he was like batting sixth, seventh, eighth. Ohapi hadn't moved up for a good while. Like they just, Ron Washington, I don't know. From what I heard, from what I have heard, and actually on Rates and Barrels 2 days ago, 3 days ago, Eno and DVR were talking with Sam Blum, who's an Angels beat writer for The Athletic. And he was saying, like, apparently Ron Washington has done a pretty good job from what they have seen there. It's not an easy situation going in and managing a team like the Angels. They are currently, as of today, 33-46. I don't know. From an outsider's point of view, it seems like he's done an okay job, but I don't understand the decisions he makes with the batting order. Neto should be a lot higher, a lot closer to the top. It hasn't held him back, though. From a fantasy point of view, we're still looking at a guy who is firmly a top 100 overall player, and I think he's well on his way to a 2020 season, probably somewhere in the 250 range for batting average. But there's a lot of value in that. If somebody's going if somebody's going 2020 and giving you a solid enough batting average, that's really, really good. He's actually closer to top 150 overall than 200, and he's only on 27% of Yahoo rosters, and he's actually trended down over the last week. He's down 1%. Now, we are seeing some ads today. Yesterday, he went 2-for-4, drove in 3 runs. People are going to be always jumping on that kind of thing when they see it. But as a whole, we're not seeing him getting scooped up nearly as much as I think he should. I would really, really like to see him move to the top of the order. We've seen him run some really nice walk rates and on-base percentages in the minor leagues. So far at the big league level, it's about a 5.5-6% walk rate, which isn't crazy, but put him up at the top of the order. Like, this is a guy who has the potential to be a real stud. He was only drafted in 2022, and we're already seeing him kind of hit the ground running as a big leaguer here. I just want Ron Washington to move him up. And even if he doesn't, the thing is, even if he doesn't, because most of the year we have seen him at the bottom, and he just does exactly what he's done to this point, and you take even the most conservative projection going forward, and you're still getting about 18, 19 home runs with about 16, 17 steals and a 250 batting average. I think it's really good stuff. And in terms of runs and RBI, you're probably looking at about 70 and 70. So I think there is a lot of value here. Even at the crowded shortstop position, I think that he should be a lot more than 26, 27% rostered on Yahoo. It does not feel enough. Let's talk about Ryan O'Hearn, because we haven't checked in on him in a few days, and he is kind of my cause this year. Every year there seems to be one or two players that every analyst kind of does this. There's one or two guys that you just kind of get attached to for one reason or another. For me, it is Ryan O'Hearn for whatever reason. I think it's because people just still leave him on the waiver wire for, again, I have no idea what the reason is. I don't think people are ever going to catch on. But I'm still going to talk about him. He's batting 284 with a 340 on base and a 470 slug, 28 runs, 10 homers, 33 ribbies, and 3 stolen bases to boot. It's real simple for me with Ryan O'Hearn. Most days, he's batting third or fourth for a top five lineup in baseball. That's kind of where the conversation can just end, as far as I see it. It's the same kind of thing that I talk about in terms of Taj Bradley. He has a 30% strikeout rate. Therefore, you add him. Sometimes it is that simple. With O'Hearn, when you're getting regular at-bats in the middle of what is maybe not the best lineup in baseball, but top three, top four lineup at worst, when you're looking at a guy who has cut his strikeout rate so dramatically, he's been a high 20 strikeout rate guy for a lot of his career, 23.5 as a whole, because the last couple of years we've seen 22, 24, he's brought it down a bit. He's down at 10%, his strikeout rate. He's cut 12 points off of his strikeout rate. And if you look at the swinging strike percentage, he's cut about 2.5 points off of that as well. So maybe it's a little bit dramatic. Maybe he's going to be up at like 13, 14, 15% strikeout rate. But this is a massive improvement there. He's also got the walk rate up to 8.1, when the last 3 years it's been 5.1, 5.5, 4.1. He's a true asset across all five categories right now. Okay, maybe steals is pushing it a little bit. But 3 stolen bases, you're probably going to get a few more. It's a non-zero number. And with O'Hearn, I think if you got 1 or 2 going into the year, you wouldn't be shocked at all. Getting 5 or 6 likely, that's pretty solid stuff. The runs in RBI didn't really come along for the first part of the season, which is why people were kind of leaving him around on waiver wires. I remember when I was on RotoWire with Jeff Erickson, when was that? About a month ago, a little more than a month ago. We were talking about O'Hearn, and that was a big thing at the time. He had like 8 homers, 7 homers, but only like 17 ribby. But it always felt like that was coming, considering his lineup placement and considering the fact that he's a left-handed hitter in that park. Righties are going to be a little more hindered. Lefties, they're, you know, wheels are up, essentially, with the way that that ballpark is configured. Ryan O'Hearn is somebody that should be, I think, 60-70+% roster rate on Yahoo. He has eligibility at first base and in the outfield. That is another just added bonus. Even if he was just at one or the other, I think I'd be pretty interested in taking a shot on him. But the thing that I just don't understand is that Yahoo managers are falling behind here when he is literally like perfectly designed for the Yahoo format. Most leagues on Yahoo are daily leagues. Most people who play Yahoo don't set their lineup on Sunday or Monday and then play it out for the week and then set it again next Sunday. You're setting it Monday, you're setting it Tuesday, you're setting it Wednesday, et cetera, et cetera. And a guy like Ryan O'Hearn, you might say, well, he doesn't play every single day. Against lefties, he's going to hit the bench. So on those days, you put him on the bench, and you put somebody else in your lineup, and you're not losing anything. In a weekly league where maybe the Orioles play three or four lefties, there's where you would be losing something. But if you're talking about a daily changes league, you're getting every bit of production out of O'Hearn while not taking zeros when he is out of the lineup. I don't understand it at this point. He's been so good the whole season. Great batting average, great lineup, great eligibility, great plate skills. I don't understand it. You guys need to be adding O'Hearn wherever you're still seeing him. This is a pretty, I wouldn't say it's a priority, honestly, just because nobody's going to do it. Nobody sees what O'Hearn is doing and gives a shit, but they should. This is the kind of boring production. We've talked about this a couple times this year. The quote-unquote boring players are the ones that win you your leagues more often than not. Taking the shots on the high upside guys in round two and round three, like, yeah, that can pay off and win you a league, but a guy on the waiver wire who's doing everything O'Hearn is doing, it's foolish to leave him out there, to be perfectly honest. There's nothing working against him. The team, the lineup, the production, the eligibility, everything is really, really good. So I would pick up Ryan O'Hearn, even in the shallowest of leagues, even in a 10-team league, I think that there is a lot of value in rostering him.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Here's somebody I sure as hell did not think I'd be talking about much this year. That's Kyle Higashioka. But after the day he had yesterday, it's kind of hard to ignore him. A couple of home runs, he drove in six. Just a monstrous day. And whenever that happens, you're going to see a few people get tempted into adding him, whoever the player may be, if they go for a couple home runs. The infamous Trace Thompson three home run game at the beginning of last year led to a lot of ads. That one pops out of my mind. But with Higashioka, there's really nothing here unless you're playing in a super deep two-catcher league. The 8 home runs is fairly nice in 32 games. It's actually really excellent, but a 34% strikeout rate, .207 batting average. He's not somebody who gets a lot of playing time. Usually you're playing every other day at the bottom of the order. There's just not, you can't justify it. I've been getting questions the last few days about dropping guys like Ryan Jeffers and Sean Murphy in one catcher leagues. There's no, absolutely no reason to do it. If you are playing in a one catcher format in the two catcher leagues, you know, if you're running out like Alejandro Kirk as your C2, like I've been in a couple leagues, it's probably an upgrade. It's almost certainly an upgrade, but it's kind of just the deep league players at this point who need to be and any degree of interested here. Joe Adell is also somebody I think we need to discuss. I mentioned him earlier in the show, but I think it's time you cut him pretty much everywhere. This has been just a disgustingly abysmal run for him. I was so excited. I think a lot of us were kind of excited. Whenever a prospect pans out, you know, even it's like the Jerickson Profar stuff this year, a prospect that you weren't really expecting to pan out, and it's not the, I mean, Profar didn't pan out as a prospect, but just seeing those guys who maybe people considered a bust have like those massive seasons, and it's just always kind of a fun thing to watch. And it was the same with Adell. He was brilliant for a while. He was like a top 50 fantasy player, maybe even higher at a certain point this year. The home runs were there, the steals were there, and he has 12 homers and 9 steals. The problem is he's batting a .183 for the season as a whole now, and over the last month, over the last 30 days, he's 9-77. That's a .117 batting average. There's no room at that point. You don't have any room even on deep league rosters to be holding on. As much as it pains me to say, like, he hits the ball incredibly hard, and if he gets hot again, I actually wouldn't mind picking him up. The type of player with a massive like 30%+ strikeout rate, bat on base skills. Those are the type of guys that like every now and then will just pop and have a really nice hot streak, which is kind of what we saw earlier in the year from him. And you'll see it with like, I don't know, Jack Suwinski, Nolan Gorman, those types of players. It's the same type of thing. You see them get hot and there's a good chance over a week or two span, they can give you some incredible production. But once it gets cold again, you've got to be dropping them. There's no real reason to be holding on to Joe Adell at this point. I don't think we're declaring him a total bust as of yet. He did show some flashes this season, and he is among the leaders in terms of hard hit rates this season. His 12.3% barrel rate is excellent, but he just can't put it together for whatever reason. It just never seems to fully come to fruition at the big league level. For his career, across his 250 major league games at this point, it's a 34% strikeout rate with a 5.3 walk percentage, a 71 WRC+. I don't think there's really much there, even in those deep, deep leagues. I know outfield has been atrocious in 15-teamers pretty much everywhere, but specifically if you are playing in 15-teamers, outfield has not been your friend this season, unless you just got really lucky on draft day. But it sucked. Even though it has sucked, you can't justify sending him back out there to go 0 for 0 for 0 for 0 for 0 for, and then 1 for 4, 1 for 4 like twice, 3 times a month at this point. With the way it's headed, it's really bad for Joe Adell, and I don't want to fully put the nail in the coffin on his career, but at the same time, I don't think we're heading into a great place going forward. I think we're pretty close to declaring him a bust. But let's talk about some of the popular ads and drops of the day, and we'll start with David Festa, who is going to be starting this afternoon against Arizona, making his major league debut. I get very nervous about anybody making their debut. The exception, I guess, was Paul Skeens, because we were just so excited about it. And I told everybody, like, start him everywhere, all formats, whatever. With Festa, I think it's a little bit nerve-wracking to start him here. I don't think it's terrible. Like, he's been really good in AAA this season. In his 59 innings, we've seen a 3.77 ERA, 25.4 strikeout minus walk rate. I think there's a chance it goes fairly well for you. But at the same time, Arizona, they don't really get the credit they probably deserve for how solid they have been offensively this season. The team is 39-41 as a whole, fairly disappointing. But they're top 10 in nearly every offensive category, the basic ones, the advanced ones. Home runs, they're not so great. They're 18th in Major League Baseball in home runs, but they're a top 10 team in terms of runs, hits, batting average, on base. They're 13th in slugging percentage. They're a pretty solid offense. This isn't some bird of a matchup. With Festa, I think it's fine in those deeper leagues, but I do get very, very nervous about trusting anybody for their first career start away from home. I just, away from home, at home, wherever, at first career start, it just generally makes me pretty nervous, and I think it's wise on most occasions to kind of avoid it outside of some deeper leagues. I think that is really the only place where I'd be actively seeking him is those 15-teamers. It'll be interesting to see, because the way the NFBC works, you can't bid on a player until they've actually appeared, unless they were drafted and dropped. So if you drafted David Festa, I don't think anybody did, but if you drafted him in a standard redraft league and he was put back into the player pool, he was dropped, then he'd be available for pickup, like as of whatever, and during any week. But if you're talking about a guy who hasn't debuted at all, like David Festa's first time on a lot of waiver wires on the NFBC this year is going to be this Sunday after he debuts. And I'm interested to see what the bidding is like. There's more money being saved on Fab this year as a whole. People aren't spending so much early in the season from the data that I have seen and the posts I've seen go out on Twitter. People have more Fab, so I'll be interested to see what the price actually is here. The prospect potential, the pedigree, is really, really excellent. Those strikeouts are massive. Command has been a slight issue in the minors. 8, 9, 10% walk rates. I think there is some stuff to like here, but I just tend to lean in a debut towards letting somebody else deal with that problem. If you miss out, you know, you miss out. I think that's generally the way that I view things. In deeper leagues, you want to maybe take more of a chance because, like we've mentioned a lot, there's just fewer replacement options. 10 and 12 team league managers, like I've seen, there's 8,000 ads on Yahoo today. It might work out. I think for the majority of those players, like if you are in a 10-teamer and you're adding him and starting him, I think you're asking for a bit of trouble. I'm probably going to butcher this name to some extent, so bear with me, but Jonkenzie Noel is also among the most popular ads today. If you are unfamiliar, he's a prospect in the Guardian system. He made his Major League debut yesterday and homered in his first at-bat. You love to see it. He has great power. If you just look at his numbers in the minors, 18 home runs in 65 games last season in AAA, that was a .283 ISO. The year before, in 2023, 27 homers in 138 games with a .200 ISO. He's also shown some pretty decent plate skills. Coming up the minors, 21% strikeout rate and a nearly 7% walk rate in AAA this season. That is really, really nice to see. He can play a few different positions as well. He's first base, third base, and outfield eligible if you're looking at Yahoo. So there might be something here, but I think it's more specifically for deeper league players. Don't know that there's really an obvious spot for him to get every day at bats. He's probably going to play here and there. He'll get a day at first. He'll get a day in left field. He'll get a day maybe at third here and there, whatever. But this is not a situation where I think he's a shallow league pickup like we're seeing here with a lot of these ads. 6,000 ads nearly on Yahoo today. I don't think it's going to pan out for shallow league players simply because of the playing time. If we start to see the Guardians playing him every single day, there is a chance in that great lineup that he's able to hold some medium depth league viability, 12-teamers and beyond type of thing. As of right now, I think it's a little bit too risky of a proposition in my book. Michael Wacha getting added up a lot as a streamer against Cleveland. Really risky business here. I've never been a big Michael Wacha fan. I think he's okay, but Cleveland is a really good offense. Like, they have just been incredible so far this season. I think you're playing with some fire. Wacha does have a 4.07 ERA, a 4.10 xFIP. He has a 4.20 Sierra, 13% strikeout minus walk rate. It's pretty standard Michael Wacha stuff. There was a stretch earlier in the year where he was doing pretty well, and he's on a pretty decent stretch right now, actually. But I think, you know, you're looking at the opponents: Seattle, the Angels, Detroit, Tampa, the Padres, Texas. Padres are a tricky team in there, but I think this is more so he's had some good starts against some subpar opponents, other than, yeah, Michael Wacha is now somebody we're trusting and picking up to start against a really great offense. I think that is taking things a little too far in my book. Ben Lively is also among the popular ads. He's on the other side of that matchup tonight against Wacha, and they are going to be in Kansas City. I think that I'm a little more interested in Ben Lively. We've seen some really, really good stuff from him, and he is a more viable streamer on a given night, even against a relatively tough team. But still, I think this is more reserved for slightly deeper leagues. Like, I don't mind it in a 10-teamer if you're kind of desperate because of, you know, we've seen some pretty solid production from Ben Lively. But at the same time, you shouldn't be looking for reasons to stream a player. In my opinion, you should almost be looking for reasons not to. There are a lot of reasons not to go for either of these guys, for Wacha and for Lively. It's still relatively early in the head-to-head week. We're at the midway point If you're streaming them in there, they can really do some damage. What's the greatest thing you're going to see from Michael Wacha? Is it 8 or 9 shutout innings? No. Is it even 6 or 7 shutout innings? Probably not. The best case scenario was probably about 6 innings, 2 or 3 earned runs with 5 or 6 strikeouts. That's the best case scenario, in my opinion. And it's probably roughly the same thing for Lively. Maybe you get 5, 6 innings. Lively, you know, maybe he's going to give you 4 or 5 strikeouts. But I think the upside is fairly limited. If you are strictly just looking for volume and you're saying, I need to just keep up with my opponent's innings this week, take some chances, you know, flying a little loose here, then that's okay as well. But I think that there are a lot of risks. The risk kind of outweighs the reward for me here with both of these guys, unless we are talking about some deeper leagues. Mark Vientos, another day where he's a popular ad. We talked about him on yesterday's show. He's been fantastic this season. He's batting nearly 300, 9 home runs. The Mets have been great. I think he's a fantastic ad. At first and third base eligibility, that's really some good stuff. Drew Thorpe is also among the popular ads. I think this is a little bit risky, personally. I'm not quite sold that he is ready yet. We talked about him a lot on the show with James a few days ago. So the good news and the reason why he's being picked up is because instead of facing the Braves, he's now going to face the Rockies. But I kind of need to see him prove it to me a little more. His start against the Tigers, while it was an improvement, he still walked 4 batters against a pretty bad team. Colorado, generally speaking, doesn't scare me too much. But again, it's another situation of what's the upside? What's the best thing that can happen here? Is it 6 or 7 shutout innings? Maybe he can do that for you. But I think the odds are pretty low. Unless you're playing in a deep league, I think Drew Thorpe should remain waiver wire fodder for the time being. Jose Miranda is among the popular ads as well. Been a huge fan of him this season. He's one of the big wins that I had in draft season just because the price, it should have been reduced after last year. Last year was horrendous, but it was reduced way too much. Like, he was going in the 700s, late 600s, 710, 720 type of range in draft and hold leagues where he was like a 40th round pick, 40 to 45th round. At that point, it made too much sense to not take a chance, or it didn't make any sense to not take a chance on him. And we've seen 25 runs, 8 homers, 33 ribbies with a steal and a .293 batting average. I think we're getting to the point where he's going to force their hand to be an every single day player. He's in the lineup again today, batting 4th, which I've really liked to see recently, him moving up that order. We had seen him there occasionally before. They really move around the order. One day he's 6th, one day he's 4th, one day he's 9th, one day he's 3rd, one day he's 5th. We're seeing him over the last 4 games he's played, 3 of them have been in the 4th spot in the order. So that is a good sign that we are seeing Jose Miranda start to gain a little more favor and start to get closer to an everyday role. So I do think, you know, considering, again, the weak third base position, he's somebody I'd be pretty interested in picking up there. Trevor Rogers, this one is another one where we're asking for trouble. People are picking him up for a start against the Phillies. And, I mean, he's had a couple of good starts in a row, but Seattle and Washington, he did well against Cleveland before that as well, I suppose. But this is another one where it's like, what's the best case scenario for Trevor Rogers? It's not terribly great. There are a lot more, there's a much bigger chance of things ending poorly than ending well for Trevor Rogers. So I don't want to go out of my way and add trouble, potential trouble to my roster. There's really not a lot of upside. I think that he's really not somebody you need to be worried about in most cases at this point. I think that he's really, really just a deep league streamer. If you see a Colorado away from Coors, if you see Oakland, if you see Pittsburgh, Detroit, those type of teams, most of you don't need to worry about Trevor Rogers at all, specifically not for a start against the Phillies. But let's talk about the drops. Spencer Turnbull, this was a brutal one. People picked him up to start yesterday. He got 3 innings of 1-run ball, and then he had to leave with a shoulder injury. Did they say what it was? They said it was a sore shoulder. Either way, he was picked up as a streamer. I'm very happily dropping him at this point. Again, he downplayed the injury, said it wasn't so bad. I tend to ignore when players say things because generally they don't know the whole situation or they don't want to tell you the whole truth. Like Christian Javier, a few days before he had Tommy John surgery, said his arm was feeling much better. So I just don't want to hear anything the players have to say. I want to hear it from the team or from a doctor or from a more official source. And yeah, you're going to say, like, well, doesn't the player know his own body? No, players generally don't. They generally say shit to the media that is not true and is misleading and will make you do things for fantasy that aren't actually the right thing to do, because you'll see, oh, he's feeling better. Maybe I'll go and send in a trade for Christian Javier because he's going to be healthy. He's going to come back in the second half. and then he has Tommy John surgery. And that's just one example. I've not liked Christian Javier for a while. I did not do that myself. But you can see why people get very frustrated when a player says one thing, and maybe, you know, somebody will hold Turnbull because he says, oh, it's not that serious. Arm injuries in general, you don't want to play around most of the time, and you see this kind of thing, especially for a more fringe guy who was going to need to be built back up into a starter anyway. You're probably wasting your time holding on to Spencer Turnbull. Same thing goes for DJ Hertz. Another tough start yesterday, 4 runs on 6 hits with 2 walks, struck out just 1 batter in 3 1/3. That start against Miami was exactly that. It was a start against Miami where they're just awful, and he was great, no question. 13 strikeouts, 6 innings of shutout ball. He was brilliant. At the same time, it was very unlikely to happen again, and we've seen over the last couple starts how miserable it can get. If you did pick up DJ Hertz, I would very, very happily put him back on the waiver wire. Brian Bello is also among the popular drops today. We've talked about this quite a bit, that I think he is a pretty, pretty easy drop at this point. The one thing that might make you hold on, and I hate the Red Sox for doing this to us, I really do. So he was originally going to have a two-star week next week, but they are going to push him back. He's not pitching, or excuse me, two-star week for this week. He was supposed to pitch against the Padres on Sunday, but they've pushed him back, and he is now going to start against the Marlins on Wednesday. Shit, I was ready to drop him everywhere this weekend. I'd already dropped him in most leagues. I still had him in a couple of 15-teamers. And now it's the Al Pacino Godfather, I thought I was out, they pulled me back in type of thing. I think Brian Bello stinks right now. I think he is atrocious. But I also think I could round up a few listeners for a softball game and we'd be pretty competitive against the Marlins right now. So I feel like he's probably somebody you're still holding on to for that one in deeper leagues. And that's truly the end of the road. If he doesn't give you an immaculate outing there, that is the end. It's already the end of the road in a lot of cases. He should be dropped in 10s and 12s. Maybe if it's a deep 12-team league where there's a lot of pitching spots, it's a little different. But Brian Bello, I think for the most part, can get the hell out of here. Deep leagues, though, I think he's going to keep me hanging on just because of that Marlins start. I really hate the Red Sox for doing that, but that's where we are. Willier Abreu is also a very popular drop recently. Haven't seen the same dude since he's been activated, 1-for-12. We talked about this yesterday. Sometimes guys go on a miracle run, and then it comes to a halt because of an injury, because of something getting mixed up in their routine or whatever, an off day, and it's very hard to get that back. Willier Abreu, before he went down, was a fantastic fantasy asset. At this point, though, it looks like we've come fully back to earth, and you're pretty safe in dropping him. He's at 30% on Yahoo. He is falling very dramatically, and I think he should continue to fall as the day goes on. But that will do it for us today, guys. I am going to be recording an episode of the Baseball HQ radio podcast later today with Patrick Davitt. That one will be out tomorrow in the Baseball HQ feed if you guys are interested in hearing more from me. But I totally understand if you get your daily fill on this show, and that's about as much of me as you can handle. So I appreciate everybody coming in, hanging out. If you haven't subscribed to the show yet, really would appreciate that and any ratings, reviews you can give. We are going to be back again tomorrow talking about everything that happened on Thursday slate and also setting you up for some weekend streamers. I'm also going to the Blue Jays game tomorrow. I bought some tickets for myself and my dad. So tomorrow night on Friday, there won't be any quick hit notes for me over on Twitter. Just something to keep in mind as well, as I will be out. But we will be doing tomorrow's show, of course, doing the same thing we usually do. And like I said, we're going to highlight a couple of my favorite pitching streamers for the weekend. And we will do that tomorrow afternoon. But until then, everybody, take care. And have a great night.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.